go ahead and turn things over to your primary presenter, Laura Coughlin, who is going to kick things off today. So, Laura, whenever you're ready, please begin.
Thanks, Jean. Welcome, everybody. This should hopefully be a very informative 1 hour of your time, and we want to answer as many questions as we can get to during the two breaks that we're going to have for questions. So with that, I will start it off. What is an interim operation? Pre-processing or storage of waste at a site before moving it to a different facility for the final recovery or disposal is called an interim operation. And we have defined seven interim operations in 26281. And you can see them listed below. The codes that start with an R are for recovery operations, D for disposal, and RC or DC are codes that should only be used when your shipment is with Canada. For example, if you were shipping to an interim facility in France, you would use D15. If you were shipping to an interim facility in Canada, you would use DC17. Hopefully that makes sense. Those are the codes in the regulations. We have the specific Canada codes to match more closely to their reg text where it differed from the OECD default text, OECD or Basel code description. Where it says that you have to list both of these things in the notice, for exports, you are required under 26283B1II to list the foreign receiving facility information, name, address, contact information, and the recovery or disposal operation that it will do. Then it, when you go down a little bit in the text, in 26283B3, if that facility that you listed initially is doing an interim operation with any of the codes listed in the previous slide, then you have to list a second facility that will be doing the final recovery or disposal operation and include all its information, including the operation code, excuse me. On the import side, it's in 26284B1II, and then 26482B2. They consciously are as parallel a construction as possible between the two sections. So in case you were wondering where that is, that's where it's required. And it's required to list one facility. So here's some scenarios that could potentially be occurring. For scenario one, you have an exporter in the United States that ships first to an interim facility and then to a final facility, and both of those interim and final facilities are in country A. Or scenario two, you ship to an interim facility in country A, the final facility is in a second country, or actually a third country, country B. Scenario three, you ship to an interim facility in country A and then ship back to a final facility in the United States. We've gotten export notices covering all of these scenarios. On the import side, you could have a scenario where country A ships to both interim and final facilities in the United States. Country A ships to an interim facility in the United States and then a final facility either in country A or in a third country, country B. Or country A ships to an interim facility in country B and then only the final facility is in the United States. You'll notice that all of those six scenarios just had one facility per interim and one facility per final. In the regulatory text, it limits what you list in your notice to a maximum of one interim and one final. So what do you do if you have multiple facilities? You do multiple notices. As shown, the first graphic at the top of the slide is an import scenario where you have, let's say you have two final facilities. You want to ship a total of 10,000 tons over approximately 100 shipments, but you don't know which of the two final facilities will get. You would do two notices. Each notice would list the interim and one of the final facilities. And each notice would list the maximum allowable if you wanted maximum flexibility. So theoretically, it was possible that only final facility one would get all the shipments. Then you want to make sure that your consent goes up to your maximum total quantity that would be shipped and the total number of shipments that you want to request. And you do the same thing for final facility number two if, in fact, you weren't sure. If you know that they're each going to get a maximum of 50%, then fine, split it up. But otherwise, you're not penalized under RCRA if you don't ship up to the maximum amount of your consent. You're only penalized or in violation if you exceed your consented amount. So there shouldn't be a problem doing this. On the export side, similarly, if you've got multiple final facilities, you split it up over multiple notices. And that way, you have consent for maximum flexibility to either situation. Obtaining consents. When you have both interim and final facilities in your notice, really, your consent is dependent on both the first leg of the shipment to the interim facility and the second leg of the shipment to the final facility being allowable, being permitted, or otherwise authorized. So for exports, if the export notice, if the situation is that both the interim and the final are in one country, it's the same process. As always, we're going to ship it to the country of import because there's only one country of import. If you're in the situation where there's two countries, one country for the interim, one country for the final, we're going to forward the notice to both countries as countries of import and ask for their consent. If the consent is already in place, you know, under OECD procedures, there should have been a separate export notice for the second leg going to that second country. If you've already got that in place, we advise you to let EPA know that by emailing the notice officers a scanned copy of that secondary consent and include something in the subject line similar to what's on the slide, attachment documenting secondary consent for export notice, blah, 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 blah. Similarly for imports, if the interim facility is in the United States but the final is not in the United States, EPA needs a second notice and consent for that second leg. If you've already got that set up, then you can let EPA know that by sending an email as per the first bullet and let us know what that EPA notice number is and the waste stream number to cover that second leg. If you don't have that secondary notice submitted, you need to submit it as soon as possible because our consent to the initial leg is going to be predicated on that second leg consent as well. So in that case, when you submit that second export notice, you need to link back to the initial import notice so that we understand that they're linked. And that's described in the second bullet. questions?
And this is just a quick reminder, you can electronically submit your questions and comments for our presenter using the Q&A window in the lower right corner of your screen. So again, I'll just remind everybody, you can type those in at any time. I think a few of you might be typing them in, if I'm looking at this correctly, so we may just hold tight while we wait to get a number of questions into the queue. A few of you did ask if you can get copies of the presentation material. I just wanted to remind everybody that those slides are currently available to download from the seminar resources or links page. So if you look on the middle right of your screen, there's a box that says related URL. If you click on the link for seminar resources and press the browse to button, that should bring you to a page where you can download copies of the slides. So again, if you have questions or comments on today's topic, now is the time to start typing them in. Some of you have asked me if you can give feedback on the earlier webinar that we held today, and yes, you can. I'll be sure to get you that link in just a moment. And from what I can tell, Laura, it does look like we have some questions that are coming in on the content, so if you want to transition and start going through those, go right ahead.
We have a question. When would a generator apply the R13 and R1 disposal facility codes to an export notice when exporting to Canada?
When you have separate facilities doing the R13 and the R1 disposal operations, if somebody is just storing it initially and then they're going to do the final operation at the same facility, you don't list both those codes. You would only list it if it's going, let's say, facility A does the temporary storage and facility B does the final disposal operation.
If EPA has approved a shipment to the interim facility and the shipment to the secondary facility has also been approved, what happens if the shipment is in transit to the interim facility and the country for the final facility suddenly revokes that approval?
That's a really good question. If they revoke their approval, we would have to inform the initial country of import. And if they have more than one final facility identified and they only revoke their approval to one facility, they could go and use the other consent that they have established for that other final facility. If indeed that's the sole final facility that they have consent to ship to from that interim site, we would have to work with the other countries to inform them that the shipment would have to be returned or alternative management would have to be found. And that is, you know, part of the established OECD procedures.
Is temporary storage of waste on a transport vehicle without any mixing or blending considered an interim operation?
In terms of 10 days or less, and I'm going to have to deal with that offline because that could be getting into some manifesting type requirements that I need to consult with some of my colleagues with. But in general, if you're storing at a site and for over 10 days, you're going to be not a transfer facility, not in transit anymore, and while you might not need to do a separate manifest, you can continue on the same manifest, you absolutely could qualify as an interim facility. But let's deal with that more offline. Chris, you can email me. I know you're not shy.
You have another one?
Let's do one more and then we'll move on.
Okay.
So
good afternoon.
Make sure.
If we already have an AOC, what can we do to make the renewal in order to proceed operations? What are the steps to do it?
If your consent is winding down and you need to submit a notice requesting a new consent, a renewed consent for those same waste streams, you can get into WEETS. You can access your notice from your previous consent and duplicate it. And with that, I think we're going to move on to the next set of slides. If we didn't get to your question, we've got another section for questions, and we'll work on it as well. So in addition to the interim final specific information as part of the notice and the administrative procedures we follow, there's contract requirements that are specific to those situations where there's both interim and final facilities included. For exports, under 26283F6, you must have contracts or chains of contracts that involve both the interim facility and the final facility, and contracts must specify that the interim facility will provide the notification prior to any re-export of the waste to a final facility in another country, and also that the interim facility will send the secondary confirmations of recovery or disposal that it receives from the final facility back to the country of import, the initial country of import. And there's an asterisk just reminding everybody right now, those confirmations must be kept on site with the exporter and kept for 3 years on site. But for contracts that will be in effect on or after the electronic import-export reporting compliance date, once we announce it, the contracts must also specify that EPA get an electronic copy of that from the interim facility at the same time. We haven't announced it, but I want to keep that in everybody's mind that at some time in the future, you will also be required to ensure that the contracts require that we get an electronic copy in the future. On the import side, 26284F5 requires that contracts specify that the U.S. importer or U.S. interim facility provide notification to EPA prior to any re-export of the waste to a final facility in another country. And 26284G2 and 26412A4II, and the parallel requirement in 26512A4II, or triple I, little tiny print, requires that the U.S. interim facility send secondary confirmations of recovery or disposal that it receives from the final facility to the country of export. With the same reminder that once we've announced and passed that electronic import-export reporting compliance date, EPA needs to get an electronic copy of both the initial confirmation of completing the interim operation and then an electronic copy of the final confirmation of completing the final recovery or disposal operation. And to try to show it graphically, I made pictures. So the first at the top is for import. The one on the bottom is for export. Just to explain a little bit of the acronyms that I'm using, RM stands for the RCRA Hazardous Waste Manifest. IMD stands for International Movement Document, which in the case of shipments with Canada can absolutely be the Canadian Movement Document. Case of shipments with Mexico, it can be the Mexican manifest or a combination of the Mexican manifest and the RCRA manifest, so long as all the information that's required in the movement document requirements on the export or import side are included in the documents. CR stands for confirmation of receipt. CRDI stands for Confirmation of Interim Recovery or Disposal, and CRDF stands for Confirmation of Final Recovery or Disposal. So in the top graphic, you have an import situation. The shipment is leaving country A, and it's accompanied by an international movement document. As it enters the United States, it's dropped off at the port. In this case, it's a water port somewhere probably in the state of California. But, you know, it's an estimate. The movement document continues on into the United States because it's from start to finish. But upon the first act of public transportation in the United States, there also has to be a RCRA manifest, as noted by the red box and indicated by RM1. I want to just take this moment to add a couple of assumptions or explain a couple of assumptions that are reflected in this graphic. First off, this is assuming that the waste is required to be RCRA manifested. Import shipments of universal waste, import shipments of slabs being managed under 40 CFR Part 266 Subpart G or the universal waste standards of 40 CFR 273 are not required to be federally, to be RCRA manifested. So in those cases, you wouldn't see those red boxes unless a state was more stringent and was requiring RCRA manifesting for those shipments. This graphic also assumes that the interim operation is changing the DOT description for the waste in the shipment, which is why there's an RM1 and an RM2. If the interim facility was only doing storage, that wouldn't change the DOT description, so it could only move on a single manifest. But this is reflecting the most complex case where, let's say there's some repackaging or some consolidation where the container sizes are changing. Something's changing sufficient enough that the DOT description is changing and requiring a second manifest. This graphic lastly assumes that the interim facility is a permitted TSDF that can be the designated facility listed on a manifest as receiving the waste, which is why RM1 is ending and RM2 is starting. If the interim facility is not permitted, then the final facility shown in the graphic would be listed as a designated facility for both RM1 and RM2, and they would be stapled together and follow the shipment. You know, RM1 would be stapled to RM2 and would follow the shipment all the way to the final, and the final facility would sign both manifests. But again, this is the most complex situation. If it's just some interim storage and the DOT description is not changing, a single manifest could suffice. You will also notice that the international movement document ends at the interim facility. That is deliberate. Once it comes to the interim facility, they have to send back within 3 days a confirmation of receipt indicated in the green boxes, IMD-CR. Then they do their interim operation. When they complete their interim operation, they are required to send back, as soon as possible or practicable, but no later than 30 days after completing the interim operation, and no later than 1 year after receiving the shipment, they are required to send their confirmation of completing the interim operation. And that's indicated by the dashed line going back with the CRDI. So that's that first leg. Then it continues on. Under RCRA regulations, we do not require a second movement document to go from interim to final. It doesn't mean you're not required to track it. It just means you're not required to have a movement document. If it's required to be manifested, it's going to have a manifest tracking that. Otherwise, it's normal shipping papers. Because the final facility has to, by contract and by requirements in 264 and 26284, has to send back that confirmation that they have completed the final recovery or disposal operation back to the interim facility. And then the interim facility has the obligation to send back that final confirmation back to country A and keep it on site for 3 years. And after the electronic reporting compliance date hits, send a copy electronically to EPA. So that's the import side. On the export side, you see that there's an export site, and again, assuming a waste that is required to be RCRA manifested, it travels under manifest to the port of exit, somewhere along the East Coast, maybe North Carolina, maybe Virginia. The map's too small. But in any case, the manifest ends there. Hopefully you guys all tuned in to the webinar on electronic border processes, and we'll be doing electronic border processes. If you're doing the paper process, the transporter is required to sign and date at the time of estimated departure and give a copy of that to the customs officer at the port prior to departure. But in any case, the RCRA manifest is not required to follow on after that. The movement document, however, is required to go from the exporting site to the interim facility, just like it was with the import facility, import shipment. And that interim facility is required to send back within 3 days a confirmation of receipt to indicate that they have received it, they've accepted it, and they're going to begin doing their interim operation on that shipment. When it is done, when they've completed it, they will send then their confirmation that they have completed the interim recovery or disposal operation, and they will send the shipment on to the final facility. Excuse me. You will notice that I put or indicated a second movement document or some other tracking document requirement, but I put a question mark because it is up to the country of import at that time if they require it. They may or may not require a second movement document. Regardless, the shipment, as we discussed on the import side, the shipment has to be tracked, and that final facility, there must be contract terms in place to ensure that the final facility sends back, at a minimum, the confirmation of completing that final disposal or recovery operation after they have completed it to the interim facility, which then has the obligation to send it back to the exporter, to the country of import, and after the electronic reporting date kicks in, to EPA. Sorry. I realize that's a lot of information, which is why the next slide says question.
Okay, again, we'll continue to take a pause here for questions. If you have any questions, you can type them into that Q&A window in the lower right corner of the screen. And Laura, would you like me to read through some of them, or perhaps one of your other moderators?
So, question. I work for Interstate Batteries Recycling. We have warehouses that pick up scrap batteries until they have 40,000 pounds. Then the scrap batteries are shipped to a smelter that is in Canada about 5% of the time. Is that warehouse an interim operation? The scrap batteries are stored there 10 days or less. Should I send you an email about it?
Okay, Dan. If I'm remembering your situation correctly, each one of those shipping sites is listed on a separate export notice as a shipping site. As such, those are not interim sites. Those are the export sites because you have a separate export notice for each one of them. And if that's not the case, yeah, send me an email.
Next question. If the import is a slab going first to facility A in the U.S., if the slab is then transferred to facility B in the U.S. for final recycling, would consent be required for the second leg?
I'm sorry, that sounds like something's missing. Could you reread that?
Sure. If the import is a slab going first to facility A in the U.S., mm-hmm. and it is then transferred to facility B in the U.S. for final recycling, would consent be required for the second leg?
Both of them are in the same country. The notice would have to list, they're both in the U.S., notice that we would expect to receive from the foreign government or from the U.S. importer if it's not controlled as a hazardous waste in the country of export, would have to list both interim and final facilities in the United States. We would send one consent that would cover both. We would not consent unless both segments were good.
Next question. Will the WEED system be updated to include an attachment section to include contracts?
We've captured that comment. Thank you.
Please make the distinction between RCRA waste using the manifest versus a universal waste shipped on a BOL.
Bill of lading.
Yeah.
Well, as I said several times, universal waste shipments in the United States are not federally required to be RCRA manifested. Slab shipments, spent lead acid battery shipments, that are being managed under either the slab standards in 40 CFR Part 266 Subpart G or the universal waste standards as universal waste batteries under 40 CFR Part 273 are not required federally to be RCRA manifested. So in those cases, there would not be a RCRA manifest in the United States for transport in the United States. There would, however, still be the international movement document requirements. An exception reporting linked to the movement document, and confirmations linked to the movement document. So absolutely, they're not required to be RCRA manifested, but import and export shipments of universal waste and slabs are required to have international movement documents accompanying the shipment.
For the first tracking shipment scenario, if the interim facility is not permitted, which is only a storage or consolidation facility, RM1 generator will be the actual generator and RM2 generator will be the interim facility, but both of them will be finalized by the final destination facility?
Again, what I was told by someone who is much more expert on the manifest than I am is if the interim facility is not authorized to be a designated facility on a RCRA manifest, then RM1 cannot show the shipment ending. So what happens is the RM1 would list the final facility, but it gets to the interim facility and say they do some repackaging, the DOT description changes. They would create a second manifest, RM2, that would pretty much mirror everything that's in RM1 except for the changes needed to the DOT description. And they would, both of those manifests would then accompany the shipment from the interim facility to the final facility, and the final facility would sign both of them. But if you want that confirmation directly from one of the manifest team experts who I consulted prior to this webinar, send me an email and I'll be happy to to add them to the conversation. Well, there's only one slide left, and it's the contacts. And so I can really quickly say, look, here's the contacts. EPA notice officers, Janae, Jean, and Jin, the three J's. They rock. There's their phone numbers and their emails. Eva Chrysler, U.S. Competent Authority, an all-around superior attorney. Myself and Leah Johannes, Reg Geeks. You can always ask me Reg questions. If a question is about a specific notice, I would encourage you to look it up in Weeds because you can actually see the status of all your notices. But if you can't find something or you need to talk about a specific notice, emailing the notice officers as a group, and you can include me and Leah and Eva, you know, in the email just so that somebody makes sure one of us will respond to you. Email's probably the best because it's the least disruptive to all those notice processing that we all know that you want as quickly as possible. But we can talk live too.
I just want to, this is Janae Tatum. I want to just give the export and import community a heads up that we are dealing with kind of like some staff moving around situations, and I'm pretty much the only staff member that's going to consistently be in the office in the month of June. One of our people is, he's a reservist, and he is currently out for at least 3 weeks, and Jean is in and out of the office also. She has another situation going on, but please do email all of us. Don't send it just to one of us. Send the email to all of us, because there's a good chance maybe Jean is working, and she might be able to get to your imports questions a lot faster. She is the expert, so you definitely want to talk to the expert if that person is available. I'm always going to try to help you guys, but as you might imagine, it is always like a triaging every day, trying to process your notices and balancing that against your requests for questions and concerns and the system's not working and all those different things. So I'm not ignoring you. I am literally typically underwater trying to get to you guys.
It's a balancing act.
Yeah.
And same thing for me. If I haven't answered, I won't be offended if you re-ping me on an email.
Correct.
I get hundreds of emails, and sometimes emails get lost, but sometimes I'm in meetings after meetings after meetings. So we absolutely want to be responsive to you guys. With that, if there's time left, I'd be happy to answer more questions. But you could read.
When the final facility completes processing its processing, to whom does it submit notification and in what format? Is there an online form they would use?
There is not a required form. And the reason we have in the regulations that a copy doesn't have to get submitted to EPA until there's the ability to submit it electronically is because we haven't built that capability in WEETS yet. We're in the process of planning that out. You have to be able to track back to the shipment and the waste in the shipment. So at the very least, you have to have the tracking number. You have to have the date that you completed the operations. If you have multiple wastes in a shipment, there's been a question sent to me via email of, do you have to send separate confirmations when you finish doing each? No. Under the requirements, it's one confirmation per shipment. So if you have multiple wastes in that shipment, you would start the clock on when you needed to submit the confirmation. You must complete processing of all the waste in the shipment within 1 year of receipt, and you must send the confirmation within 30 days or no later than 1 year after you complete processing of all the waste in that shipment. So you don't have to do separate ones for each waste. Canada has an optional form that we absolutely find acceptable. And I believe we've put a link to it on our website. If you can't find it, send me an email. The Canadian facility should know about it because it's been up for at least a couple of years because we referenced it in the proposed rule in 2015 and included a link in the preamble text to it. So, next.
Can we use the, here's the question, can we use the Mexican manifest as an international shipment document?
Because we don't have a required form, the answer is yes, but you must ensure that all the required information is included, which is why some importers have asked if they could do a combination of like attaching together the Mexican manifest and the RCRA manifest, and between the two of them, they would have, they could ensure all the information was included that's required for an international movement document tracking. that's allowable because we don't have a required form. We're trying to be as flexible as possible to ensure both that the tracking occurs, that you have all the required elements, and that you don't have extra paper if you don't need to have extra paper.
Where do we need to list the AOC numbers in the Universal Hazardous Waste Manifest?
We deliberately did not specify a location in the reg text because we had comments from some U.S. facilities that they wanted more flexibility on where they put it. We recommend that it goes in the special instructions box where you can also put state-only codes. If you need more room, you can use a continuation sheet to add more room. When e-manifest occurs, goes live, there will be the ability to list the consent number when you're doing the waste stream stuff at the waste stream level. It will be a field, but for paper manifest, we do not recommend that you put it as part of the box that has all the DOT descriptions because that is supposed to be solely for the DOT requirements. Yes. No.
Okay. Sorry. Next question. Can you please discuss the export contract and how the final receiving facility is tied into the contract process?
Chains of contracts. It's a beautiful thing. So, much as if you have a freight forwarder that you've contracted with who then subcontracts with transporters, you can have chains of contracts, that link the first leg of the shipment with the second leg of the shipment. Everything has to be under contract, because we have to ensure that the tracking and the confirmation and the responsible management occurs as per the terms of the consent. But you can have chains of contract versus one single contract that includes everything.
Okay, so where in the regulations is language that speaks to being able to use the same manifest from the interim to the final facility?
That's going to have to be followed up with an email. I consulted with Brian Gross, who's one of the main national manifest experts. But send me an email. I'll follow up with you.
If one company ships to a storage facility in country A, and then another company picks up from storage facility and ships to country B, what requirements does the first company shipping to the storage facility have?
The first company that's shipping to the initial facility in country A is the exporter and has requirements under RCRA to submit a notice that lists both the storage facility in country A and the final facility in country B. even if a different company is picking up from that storage facility. There has to be contracts that or change of contracts that cover all that. Essentially, you can't get consent solely to shipping to the interim facility, because that interim facility is not doing the final operation that you really want to get consent to. You can't indefinitely store something in country A. They'd be upset. It's called abandonment. So there has to be contracts and arrangements to cover the second leg to where it's actually going to be managed, disposed of, or recycled.
Okay, next question. Once WEEP is active for confirmation of receipt or disposal, so I assume the person means can receive these electronically, will the secondary or final disposal facility be able to confirm in WEEP?
That's the plan. That's why the reg text is set up the way it is.
Just a minute.
We're reading a really long one. And that's going to have to be dealt with offline.
Lena Tan, if you could send us an email with your concerning your questions, that requires dealing with that sort of offline. And we can, if you just shoot us an email, we'll be able to answer your question.
Any other questions? Okay.
If we weren't able to get to your question, or if it was specifically said that you know, to be discussed offline, please shoot us an email.
Yep. But otherwise, I think we're ending a little early.
We have another one.
Oh, there's more popping up. There's more time, so. Mm-hmm.
How should the interim receiving facility meet the 3-day notification requirement?
In terms of sending back the confirmation of receipt, they have 3 days to send back the confirmation of receipt. If they use the OECD Basel movement document, there's a specific box for the facility to indicate that they've accepted the waste and to date their date of acceptance, and then they need to send it back within 3 days of that. If they're using the Canadian movement document, again, there's a section for them to sign and date indicating acceptance of the shipment. So you're using the movement document. You're sending back a copy, signed and dated, indicating that you accepted the waste in the shipment.
Oh, wait, follow-up question? Will the second facility, the final after interim, be required to confirm in WEEP, or is that the interim facility's job?
It's the interim facility's job, which is why in my handy-dandy little graphic, I show the final facility sending a confirmation back to the interim, and then the interim sending back to the exporter, and when the interim sends back. It's also in the contract slide for imports. The U.S. interim facility must send secondary confirmations of recovery or disposal that it receives from the final facility to the country of export and the exporter, and eventually, when we have that electronic capability, to EPA. Anything else?
Any other questions?
Okay,
so if it's all right with you, Laura, I'll go ahead and just walk through a few final reminders before we close things out today.
It seems to make sense.
Okay. So as was stated earlier today, copies of the presentation materials are currently available to download from the seminar resources or seminar links page. If you look at the middle right of your screen under related URLs, you'll see a link to something called the seminar resources. If you click that link and then press the browse to button, it should open up locally on your own computer. If you happen to be one of the lucky ones replaying today's recorded version, those links will still work. You can click on the link to resources and download or print out a copy of the materials. As was noted, contact information for today's presenter can also be found on the seminar homepage. I would ask if you could take just a brief message and, or take just a brief moment of your time to send us your messages and thoughts about today's live broadcast by filling out our online feedback form. You can click the link to the seminar feedback form, and you should be brought to a very short online page where you can let us know what you thought of today's delivery, both in terms of the content and the method in which we delivered it. For those of you looking for copies of a participation certificate, when you fill out the online feedback form, there is a box at the bottom of the form that you can check to certify you were here for the entire session. And once you do that and send in your feedback, you'll be able to either download or print out a copy of the certificate of participation. If you happen to join the webinar as a group, each of you can share your own feedback and get your own copy of the certificate. And this format will work for those of you replaying the recorded version, so you can still share feedback and get a certificate. With that, I would like to thank the over 100 individuals who joined us for today's live broadcast and today's presenter, as well as the commentators from her team who are helping to go through the questions. Today's session was archived, and you will automatically receive an email as soon as the session is available for on-demand playback.